The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, Fess Up and Pay Up. Media regulator Ofcom issues the BBC a record fine for a range of radio and TV phone-in scams, but has the deception issue now been firmly put to bed? Also in the podcast, Peter Barron announces he's off to become Lord of Google's PR Manor. What does it all mean? Plus, Giles Corran's four-letter rant to the Times subs and their grammatically correct responses right back at him. And...
Right, let's hear the six anyway.
Minges?
Minges.
Not a very good word.
Sounds like it could be it.
Yeah, I'll check that.
As Des O'Connor and Carol Vorderman jump ship, we'll ask, has time run out for Countdown? All these stories and more coming up on Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, last week's show was a bit of a filth fest, and I'm telling you right now, we've ticked the explicit box on iTunes with very good reason for this week. Listeners of a sensitive disposition are advised to have their earmuffs at the ready. As the rows over the future of Channel 4's top tea time quiz continue, we've taken one from the top and one from the bottom in making up your panel this week. You can guess which one's which. And they've both taken 90% pay cuts for the pleasure. Media Guardian's editor-in-chief is Janine Gibson. Do you fancy taking over from Carol Vorderman?
I'd be brilliant at
I
that.
I think you'd be really good.
That's brilliant.
I think that's a really good idea, yes.
I'd be really cheap. Yeah. Also, I would take it tremendously seriously.
You would, and I'm sure you can add up, can't you?
Do you know, they did once say at Yorkshire, why don't you come up to the studios and, you know, have a little go on the Countdown set. I think I had to give them some really ridiculous piece of publicity in exchange, which I couldn't in all conscience agree to.
It could have all gone another way, couldn't it, really, in your career? Stephen Brook is MediaGuardian.co.uk's press and publishing correspondent. A touch of Richard Whiteley's about your wardrobe, Brookie?
Well, I think I actually play very well with both the older, the blue rinse set, and also with the students.
Absolutely,
I'm personable, and I've a little cheeky smile and a glint in my eye.
Crucially, we are very cheap.
I think a new
90% pay cut for Carol equals pay rise for us.
Well,
I think
it'd be all right. I'll come along and sit in dictionary corner, shall I? Now,
Matt, I heard a rumor about you.
Oh yeah, goodness, yes.
On your recent cycling trip around Cornwall, it rained so much that your BlackBerry malfunctioned.
It did, yes.
Quel dommage. How did you survive?
Absolutely. How did I? Well, it was quite good actually, not having my BlackBerry. Don't know what that's got to do with the Countdown, though. Now, listen, as a treat to you here in the studio and all of you sitting at home or whatever you're doing, we've got a special Media Talk conundrum.
Cool. To get, give me a pen. Give me the pen.
No, that's my pen.
To get your brain cells working. Producer Ben, shall we start with a consonant?
N.
A vowel, please.
O.
Consonant, please.
D.
And another consonant.
W.
And another consonant, please, Ben.
C.
A vowel.
U.
A consonant.
N.
Oh dear, I think I have a vowel, please, Ben.
O.
Thank goodness for that. Consonant, please.
Your final letter's a T.
Thank you, Benjamin. Tricky, isn't it, Stephen? Well, should we just keep your answers for later?
Yeah.
Because it's a conundrum. So all the letters, you know how it works.
I know what it is.
We've got to give the listeners at home a chance to figure it out.
Absolutely. I'm kind of insulted. How are we supposed to audition properly if you give us this sort of unchallenging nonsense?
well, I don't know if everyone's got it yet. We'll see. We'll wait till the end of the show.
Damien Eady might be listening.
He might be. Who's Damien Eady?
Series producer of Countdown.
Oh, goodness, you've got much better knowledge than me. That. Listen, let's get started, because that's far too much frippery for the top of the show. Now, the biggest media story of the week, obviously, is the news that Ofcom slapped a record £400,000 fine on the BBC for a whole series of TV and radio phone-in fixes. And they included the fakery on the Beeb's charity events Children in Need, Sport Relief and Comic Relief. And the regulator singled out ex-BBC Six Music boss Rick Blackshill for particular criticism. Their ruling said he had, quote, full knowledge of the deception that took place on Russell Brand's show, where Blackshill, who was producing the programme and was in charge of compliance for the whole station, was, quote, complicit in the faking of a winner himself, unquote. Janine Gibson, if the BBC thought this issue had died when the BBC Trust ruled on this, they were seriously mistaken, weren't they?
Well, clearly they've known this was coming. Obviously, Rick Blackshill left, and there wasn't a great deal of effort made at the time to distance him from these sorts of allegations.
No, but we didn't know
the detail, As ever, it's hard not to be shocked by the sheer extent of it. Let me posit one small thing, though, which it does feel like some of the people in radio have been, hung out to dry. They committed the crime. But they have been exposed more willingly than some of their brethren in television.
Well, there was certainly a more junior producer was quite rather summarily sacked, wasn't there? But I'm thinking that Rick Blackstall probably didn't walk away with nothing in his back pocket, did he?
I expect there will have been some sort of... Well, we should be careful to speculate on these sorts of things. But clearly he had to leave suddenly. When it says that he was directly involved in faking, does that mean that he was that winner? Because it's all in inverted commas. Did you read that way?
Well, I sort of read it that way.
I read it as he put on a funny voice and phoned up and went, oh, the answer's Oasis.
Well, if it wasn't...
Plausible, isn't it? Yeah. Because all these scandals have revolved around them not getting a genuine competition winner. Yeah. We've seen it with Blue Peter and with the Joe Wiley show, and it's always been a member of the production team. Who knows if they were caught short yet again? He may well have stepped into the breach.
Well, I don't know whether it was him himself or that he organised for one of the producers to come on. But I mean, he was in charge of compliance at Six Music.
No, well, this is the point actually. I was sort of reaching for around the difference between radio and television. The slight problem that the radio people have had is the much slimmer structures. Mm. So actually, to pass between your head of compliance, your controller of your station, and your producer of your show because it's all the same person.
Absolutely.
So there's no sort of layers of memos that you can obfuscate around. You know, Blackstall clearly can't pass that particular bar. He's all over it.
And the real problem, obviously, with these radio ones, Steve, is that these stations were, at the time, relatively new stations with small audiences. And what you had was people coming from, you know, radio backgrounds trying to do these big competitions, trying to get people to phone in. And actually, there's not, at the beginning at least, there weren't actually that many people out there to phone in.
Exactly. They were overstretched and possibly trying to replicate an old popular, you know, regional or national station format on a digital platform. Yeah. And the listeners at that stage weren't really there, and they were trying to get audience interaction happening possibly ahead of time. Mm.
Ahead of time? They were asking people to ring in for competitions on pre-recorded shows.
Well, absolutely. The,
is there anybody listening or not? It doesn't matter whether there's anyone listening or not. They can't ring in. You're not there.
What about the principle of Ofcom fining the BBC when the BBC doesn't have shareholders? And the argument is that its licence fee pays money and nobody benefits.
Well, I keep asking this question. I still have had no good answer as to what happens to the money that Ofcom removes from the BBC.
Goes into Treasury.
Yeah, but then what? What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Well, it might, you know, instead of being...
Probably funds our yawning trade gap,
Is it paying off someone's overdraft? Because I'm not sure that's necessarily the point. It is a really problem.
Well, it is a great problem, I think. And the other thing is that Ofcom is an after-the-fact regulator. These crimes and misdemeanours have all been dealt with, in one sense, by the BBC and the BBC Trust, and appropriate people have lost their jobs. And now Ofcom comes up and hits the BBC with a financial penalty at a time when I think that the BBC has gone through a heavy re-education programme. Mm. All staff are meant to have gone on this training courses. And do we seriously believe now, as opposed to last year when all these scandals were breaking, that there is any benefit in slugging the corporation for what, at the end of the day, is licence fee payers' money?
What would be... OK, so here's a radical proposal. So far, Ofcom have taken £500,000 between this one and Blue Peter out of the BBC. Agree that we don't really know where that's gone as to maybe paying off an overdraft somewhere. But at the same time, all the people responsible for these people that have been defrauding people around here got their bonuses, see, you know, podcast pass him. Wouldn't it be better if Ofcom had the power to tell the trust to stop issuing bonuses?
Yes,
if that was a legislative power, that they could say the executive responsible do not get bonus, and that's that. And also, what about that £500,000? I think we should have a public vote on the kind of programme that we would like that £500,000 could fund. So what we need to know is, what can we get for £500,000?
It's the revival of a public service publisher, isn't it? What can we get for half... We could get...
A couple of episodes of Doctor Who.
We could get... A little mini-series, couldn't we have that?
I'm thinking a lovely one-off single drama.
A one-off single drama.
God knows we haven't had one of those for a while.
Yes, we could have a play
really
for...
Really nice.
A play for today.
Play for today.
Set inside a newspaper office.
Someone ring Alan Bennett.
Absolutely. Call.
On this point, though, I think I was quite cross with Ofcom in a way because I think they're just trying to get their regulatory tentacles into the BBC.
Just about to widen this out to the wider Ofcom point, which then allows us to bring in the other big Ofcom story of the week, which was obviously the leak of the Ofcom land grab, shall we call it, in Media Guardian on Monday, which showed that in the public service broadcasting review that they're going to publish in September, it's clear that they want to extend their regulatory tentacles, as Stephen Brooke puts it. But there is an issue here with Ofcom, that Ofcom does appear through its actions in the past and its proposed actions in the future to be trying to extend its influence, doesn't it?
There is a what can only be described as a cabal of very powerful people in public policy who have decided that the BBC's wings need to be clipped in some form or other, and they've tried all sorts of approaches at it. And at the moment, this is the sort of the new game is around this white paper or consultation document or whatever we're going to call it. It's going to be a white paper at some point. You've got to imagine it's going to form the basis of it.
And I'm cross about. I just think they should butt out. But then, again, I look at the story that we've written on the Media Guardian website about this, and through Ofcom, we actually now know more about this scandal and about the role of Rick Baxall than we did previously, because the BBC did not go into the level of detail that Ofcom have gone through in their adjudication, and to an extent protected Baxall by not publishing a full and frank adjudication of the matter at the time.
Well, protected and in some ways let go of. But I absolutely agree with you. And the BBC has to be subject to some sort of external regulation or else it will go insane. We all know that. But it's the underlying agenda that has ever concerned me, which is somewhere around New Labour especially, there was an absolute agenda to get the BBC. I have no idea why, but that they pervaded for quite a long time. And it has been at the heart of a lot of this sort of topsize the licence fee, PSP, a lot of this kind of thing. And it would be very interesting to see what happens in a new political climate, which I think we all assume is going to happen.
Yes.
It might turn out the Tories are friendlier to the BBC.
What do you mean David Miliband taking over as Prime Minister? But no, I think the difficulty for the BBC, though, in all of this, is that they just, you know, as ever, don't do themselves any favours, do they? So people like us who should be, you know, the last people standing when it comes to the BBC, tend to question ourselves and our support for the organisations when they can't deal with things like this themselves.
Well, increasingly I am the last person standing up for the BBC, apparently, in this room, certainly. I don't know what happened to you all. You all turned.
I haven't turned.
I don't think that they had... Once they did their full inquiry, let's rewind a bit, because this is very late on. But once the BBC did their full trawl, they found out about all this stuff. Yeah. They surfaced all of this lot. And they did go a lot deeper than most of the other broadcasters. And they did come up with it, all these, you know, faked phone competitions on digital radio, which you have to think, had they been under commercial ownership, might have been forgotten about.
Yes, Anton Deck are still there, and that Deloitte report hasn't been published, so, you know,
I don't think we should go mad on the BBC here. They did actually handle this quite well.
Well, let's stick with the BBC just for a moment, and with the other story raising eyebrows being Peter Barron's announcement that he's leaving his job as editor of Newsnight to become the head of communications and public affairs at Google. Now, he's going to join the web giant in September, presumably on what Sir Alan would describe as a very nice six-figure salary. Now, it's not surprising, Janine, that he might go and work at Google, and this is Jeff Jarvis's thought on his blog of this week, but is it surprising? It is surprising that he would go to work for Google as their PR guy.
I seem to have had no conversation about anything else this week. Is all anybody wants to talk about is Peter Barron going to Google. And the consensus seems to be that Peter Barron, who is fantastically sort of bright and engaged and lively and kind of slightly mad.
Terrific editor of Newsnight.
Brilliant editor of Newsnight, forward-thinking, all the rest of it, is going to be bored to death.
Yes.
Because those PR jobs are of a certain sort of type of job.
You end up going to lots of meetings and writing strategy papers, and also it's not very exciting.
It's a bit more management, really. Yeah. I don't know. It's possible he will indeed love it and needs to change pace. And I wish him all the luck in the world.
But I'm interested, Stephen.
Well, I just get a sense out of all of this that this guy strikes me as a bit of a BBC lifer. And it's a touch of the Jane Root kind of Jane a Bennett.
You've got to go out.
I'm going out, right. So I'm coming back in. Right. And, you know, the controller of BBC One now, his name is Jay Hunt. No, I'm off, and then you're going to come and get me.
So perhaps he makes himself more valuable by going outside.
Well, I think that the BBC here and now, we've seen that with a few key appointments, particularly with the head of radio, marketing guy, Davies,
Tim Davey.
You know, there seems to be a desire for the top-line executives
to have
done at least have... one other shot in their locker than BBC, BBC, BBC.
But isn't it surprising?
But that's always the way. But editorial people don't go into PR and then come back again. I mean, that ever happens. No. Andy Coulson, for example,
is not coming back to the
News. He's going to find it quite hard to go back and edit The Sun now.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out.
No.
But it's going to be quite hard.
It's interesting as well that he chose to leave at a time when he was being touted as a possible controller of BBC Two. With that job vacant.
That might have been some putting together of two and two and making 18. But because we might have sort of heard that Peter Barron might be moving on, and then we might have heard that BBC Two was vacant and gone.
Oh, well, that's him then, isn't it?
I see.
But then to answer that question, obviously he feels, no matter what we have pontificated on, that he's not going to get that BBC Two job.
No.
Or
there may be a wider point there, which is there may be a wider point
timing.
That goes. There is definitely a situation at the moment at the BBC where the controllerships of BBC Two and probably as a knock on BBC Four are in play because Janice Hadlow has been widely tipped for BBC BBC Two for about a year now. And if those two sort of jobs are in play, then and you're not sort of being tapped up for either of them, then perhaps you do feel like your future's... So I'm distracted by Gareth's memoing. I think he seems to be suggesting that we merge two and four.
Or at least the controllership.
I should say that Gareth McGrath has joined us a bit early this week, Gareth. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good.
I'm just staring at those biscuits. Sorry,
can I pass it? Is that what you wanted?
No,
I thought you were making a point.
No, I was.
You wanted the digestive.
I just thought that won't they just like merge the controllerships of BBC Two and BBC Four?
Oh, no. Well, you remember, who was it? Which grumpy old man proposed that about a year ago? Was it Humphreys? I don't know. Somebody about a year ago sort of said, you could merge one and three, you could merge two and four. Which was, and that idea had some traction.
Well, they share quite a bit of programming.
BBC Four, you're commissioning what, two hours a night maximum? Maybe, I don't know, probably not that many a night across the week if you amalgamate it down.
You could do it on a job share, couldn't you, really?
It
I am available.
Now, listen.
Unless Countdown approached me.
Well, we were talking about that already. Now, listen, I'm sure that.
What, Countdown approaching me? Are you going to start a campaign?
I'm sure that whatever happens, you'll hear.
Fight us all.
Or I could edit News Now.
I'm sure that whatever happens, you'll read it first on mediaguardian.co.uk. I'm Matt Wales, you're listening to Media Talk. Still to come, we'll stick up for the subs and muse on Giles Corran's potty mouth and...
Who's better, celebrities or civilians? It's the name that Liz Hurley gave to our language to describe ordinary, non-famous, pasty-looking people, like you.
Gareth McLean will be telling us about Alan Carr's Channel 4 payday and talking about the rest of the week's TV news. But first, we had a lot of fun at his expense last time round. Perhaps too much fun, actually. But Max Mosley is set for another round in the courts, having won his privacy case against the News of the World. The Formula One chief and prostitute botherer is now beginning libel proceedings against that Red Top and several other European titles. Elsewhere, the Press Gazette, the newspaper's trade magazine, is rumoured to be moving from a weekly to a monthly publication. And, of course, Giles Corran's sweary and very open battle with the sub-editing profession took another twist. Stephen Brook, this, of course, is all your stomping ground, isn't it? What's this about Press Gazette going monthly? Is that true?
Well, there are very strong rumours that the weekly trade journal Press Gazette is going to be converted into a monthly publication, and it's going to be more featurey, it's going to be a smaller A4 size, big interviews with sort of relevant editors.
But that's,
and then
not,
stick
that's not the bitter thing about Press Gazette that we like, though. I never read the features in Press Gazette. I always read the news and the gossip and the diary column.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because they rode back on the internet as a location for their breaking news and wanted to save it all up for the weekly publication. There is a plan afoot. I don't think the plan has been approved. But, wait and see. At the end of the week, they might have made a decision on it.
OK, what about Max Mosley? This is a sort of inevitable consequence of having won the privacy case. Now he's going after the News of the World and various other newspapers.
Bild in Germany as well. It's hard to see where this one is going to go. On the one hand, we should always remember that part of the reason he was so successful in the privacy action was that the News of the World's witness did not give evidence. And the case that they tried to build, fell apart, really, in court. Whether she would testify, this woman E, I believe her name was, in any kind of libel action remains to be seen.
All right, what about Giles Corran? These are hilarious emails. And they've been top of the Guardian.co.uk chart for days and days.
I know. Well, I've had a bit of emailage, actually, with Giles.
Have you?
I emailed him on the, it was like a tsunami, that email that went through, his email forwarded to everyone.
Because what happened was that he'd written to Time Subs, he was aghast that they changed a definite article or something, hadn't they?
Yeah, it was a...
It was a bad change. It was a bad, I read it, I thought that was, if I, you know, I've been a...
It was a bad change that ruined the joke that he was
it
making.
It did ruin the joke.
It wasn't a very funny joke.
Well, I thought it was quite a good joke.
No, it was not. Lame.
Stephen Brooke and Matt Wells, kings of the intemperate email. Are coming out in favour of Giles Corran. Have you been on the receiving end of both of your efforts?
Well, absolutely. We do have.
Mine are mild compared to his.
I should say that we're...
I'm going to ramp them up in future.
We should have. We do have a little taster of the by now infamous missive that Corran fired off to the subs at the Times, and here it is.
Chaps, I'm mightily pissed off. There is no length issue. This is someone thinking, I'll just remove this indefinite article because Corran's an illiterate cunt and I know best. Well, you fucking don't. This was shit, shit sub-editing. All the best, Giles.
Golly, talk about edited highlight. The whole thing was actually over 1,000 words.
I know.
But on the afternoon it broke, I emailed Giles because this is number 3 in a series. It's the intemperate email he sent to the reviewer of the London paper restaurant column about a review that this guy wrote that name-checked Giles. And then there was the one from years ago about the quick brown fox jumping over the lazy dog, which also got altered. And he was completely oblivious to this storm that had broken. And I just sent an email off saying, oh, you're at it again. And he's like, what? This email is actually more about 2 years old.
This Times email, really?
Yeah, and has been sitting around, and clearly somebody either out for revenge or out for a laugh has started to send it round. So Giles now admits that he's more famous for these emails than anything else he's ever written. And he told me this little anecdote of bumping into A.A. Gill at a party whom he'd never met before, and A.A. Gill saying, oh, Giles, I love you. And then Giles thinks it's going to be one of his restaurant reviews. Mm. But A.A. Gill says, that email that you sent to the sub.
Right.
That's his reputation made.
There was, of course, a response from the subs, wasn't there? And actually, it was from subs on the Sunday Times.
Yes.
It was an open letter in response. And here's some highlights from that.
Dear Giles, sub-editing is a noble profession. It's also a thankless one. There was a sharp intake of breath when your email hit the inbox of subs throughout the industry this week, after we'd stopped laughing, that is. True, there is nothing more irritating than a sub-editor who thinks they know better than a writer, particularly one who cares deeply about his work. But, Giles, did you really have to be so rude? Contrary to your assertion, we don't believe we know best when we know fuck all. Many writers don't give a damn about what they produce because they know that a good, often highly educated sub-editor will correct it, check it, and turn it into readable prose. Subs are no more infallible than writers. So let's all try a little mutual respect, shall we? All the best. Mia, Amara Ogden, and Joanna Duckworth. Senior sub-editors, The Sunday Times. Full stop.
Janine, you and I have edited some shocking copy in our time, haven't we? So, I mean, we have to have some...
Don't talk about Gareth when he's in the room.
What a cheap shot.
You have to have some sympathy with the poor subbing profession, don't you?
I think Giles's email is funnier.
It was a funnier email, yes, absolutely.
It's changed the dynamic, though, and I think that subs and writers are mutually hostile but codependent relationship because they kind of don't like each other but don't, at the end of the day, do without each other. So I was typing away on a blog for Media Guardian this week, and one
obviously
of the...
which don't get subbed.
Well, actually, this one, funnily you should say, because one of the subs popped their heads over the monitor and said, Brookie, that headline on your Giles Corran sub-editors. No, he said, did you write that? And I said, well, actually, yes, I did. And he said, sub-editors. And I said, yeah. It's not hyphenated. It's one word. Have you read the style guide?
So, that'll teach you.
Yeah, well, back listen, in my box.
Well, listen, you can read both of those emails in full over at mediaguardian.co.uk/press. Time for a bit of music now. Do you believe in life after love? And well, you know, I can see you're bopping around in the studio. Put your shirts back on, boys.
It's the man with his legs out.
It's not. Only half my legs. It's not.
That's more than enough. Thank you.
I see short shorts are back in this summer.
Mm. Well, no, below the legs, as Hadley Freeman would say.
Below the legs.
Yeah. Below the knees, I should say. Sorry.
Press anyway, on. Press on.
I am pressing on. The news is that Gaydar Radio is enlarging.
That's what that share track was all about.
Is it just pleased to see us?
It's going. They're going to launch.
Oh God! I think I've got a meeting.
I thought you were hiding from meetings in here. They're going to launch a station in Australia. This is the story. This autumn, it's their first brand extension outside the UK. Now, Stephen Brooke. Now, you're obviously an Australian.
Correct.
Do you think Australia, it says here, is ready for the heady mix of disco and lively chat?
You're not going to make him answer that, are you?
I think it'll probably play very well in Sydney, if not other markets.
Okay, right. In other gay news,
there's more gay news
this week. They've withdrawn this advert, haven't they?
For the
Snickers one. Did you think it was homophobic? Again, as with all these
things, is even more ridiculous than the Heinz means homophobe story of the other
week.
Just
a rubbish ad.
Yeah. And as if that man was gay, did you see him? The one who did the walking, the
Mr.
power
T.
walking.
No, 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 no Mr. T. The power
he wears a lot of jewellery.
I mean, this guy had mousy blonde hair, was wearing a yellow tank top and... No, a grey tank top and yellow shorts. I don't think he was gay.
There is something a bit strange, though, isn't there, about these advertisers that run scared from a protest, even though they have sort of obviously driven straight into the oncoming car crash in full knowledge, and then pull it anyway, and then manage to anger both sets. That's what gets me. So you get a kind of outrage from the right, and then an outrage from the left, and you've got a product in the middle going...
And in both these cases, Heinz and Snickers, the protests have emanated or been fuelled in the US... The Brits don't really care, but their British adverts, the Americans haven't actually seen.
Yeah.
But they're pressuring the head office in the States, who've rung up London and said, get this off the air.
Yeah.
And I think a really weird overreaction.
Yeah, which then prompts pressure groups from the liberal left to say, why on earth would you pull that?
Yeah.
Because it's being accused of promoting gay vows or whatever. It seems like a lose-lose situation.
Well, this is actually going to have a problem now. It's going to have an impact on the British advertising industry because the level of creativity is going to suffer because people aren't going to try and make jokes or take risks. I think it's all going to become a bit more tepid.
Gareth McLean, the Guardian's TV writer. Well, he's been butting in, but this is his time to shine. Time to shine now. Well, you've literally just stepped off a plane, haven't you?
I've got back from Vancouver.
Canada. What were you doing out there?
Canada. I was doing a set visit to the L Word.
Oh, right.
So I was among a lot of fake lipstick lesbians.
What was it like?
I don't think it's aimed at either of you.
I don't think it's aimed at anybody in this studio, actually, is it?
No.
Really? Well, producer Ben thinks it's brilliant.
Yeah.
The sound of one hand clapping.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Right, listen.
Canada's very clean, which I think is what you're supposed to say about Canada.
Okay. Now, listen, why all the fuss about Countdown this week?
I don't know. Why all the fuss about Countdown?
Well, that's what I'd like to know. Well, it's just a mediocre tea time quiz show, isn't it?
Pensioners will be putting down their rusks and picking up their pens and writing in to you. I don't know. I am available to either present or do the numbers, though I'm a bit short to pick any sort of letters from the top row.
You couldn't do the top.
I need a box to stand on.
Actually this taps into a peculiar British part of the psyche or the culture, which is that things are fondly remembered and provoke outrage when changes are made, even though the core audience has moved on. Smash Hits is closed, outraged. Do you actually read it anymore? No, don't be ridiculous. Grange Hill is axed, outraged. When was the last time you watched it? 20 years ago. I suspect
that
Countdown...
So what are you saying, nostalgia isn't what it used to be?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, yes, there is an issue that Stephen raises here, is that we're just nostalgic for the sake of it, aren't we?
Well, yeah, that's called being British, I think, isn't it? Right. You Englanders are always, ooh, the war, the Blitz spirit, blah, blah, the empire, whatever.
Countdown's a really good show. It's a simple, proven format. It has a million viewers every day. That's a reach of 5 million a week. I'd like to see anything else do that.
And shortly we'll be presented by Alan Carr.
Well, it's bound to be with all that money. What about
God,
that?
He's in almost as much money as Carolyn McCall.
I think he is, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I really have to be
elsewhere. Is he worth the money?
Well, I think if they find the right vehicle for him, Celebrity Ding Dong was awful.
It was
but I think
terrible.
They knew.
Was that an actual programme?
It was.
Alan Carr's Celebrity Ding Dong. Yeah,
really
it was kind
terrible.
Of awful. I mean, I think he's brilliant, but they just haven't found the right thing for him.
And isn't there a danger when you have somebody like that who's a fairly newish talent and has just come on the scene, you know, and suddenly you shower him with all that money and promises of greatness and that, and how he's going to be the face of Channel 4 for the next, you know, 15 years, that you risk kind of destroying what you've actually got.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, you sort of overwhelm them with that. And to a certain extent, the media is sort of partly responsible, and no doubt his agent's been phoning around telling people to sort of go, Alan Carr, he's brilliant. And so it all becomes a bit icky quickly.
And well, and then, of course, what will happen in 3 years' time is that the BBC will nick him and become
The new Graham Norton.
Well, actually, in 6 months will be the spate of stories. Where is the decent programme for Alan Carr? He's been wasted.
Is this why they don't slice the licence fee?
I think they have learnt from... I think they've learnt that. I think they've got about four on the back, but they've been doing a lot of pilots of Alan Carr.
All right. Well, he's certainly not going to be starring in The House of Saddam, which I've been quite enjoying. Did you watch that, the House of Saddam?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I'm going to watch it on High Player. I'm still thinking about the hairy bum to Max Mosley.
Well, we did mention it earlier on. He's suing now, so you've got to be careful.
Well,
not about whether his arse is hairy.
No, I don't think
that's established.
Is that libelous anyway?
I don't think it is.
I don't know. I'm really
perhaps
sad.
I should ask you, Gareth. How'd you last have your back waxed?
Just steady. You're the one with your legs out.
Now, before we go, the last thing I want to mention is this relaunched version of the 11 o'clock show. What are they calling it? Tonightly. Now, why isn't there a good UK political... Why can't we do that topical satire thing?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not obviously prejudging tonight.
Yes, clearly not.
Which will clearly be rubbish.
But if you think about it, well, I mean, the Daily Show's probably got like 10 funny minutes in it, and the rest's not that great. I mean, those 10 funny minutes are funny.
10 funny minutes a night is not a bad hit rate on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
But they have how many writers on
that
show?
Exactly,
and they're all like, at the top of their game.
There's probably like...
I mean, we're struggling if we get, you know, 10 funny seconds in a podcast, aren't we?
It's just not...
Is that why you got your knees out?
I'm going to tuck them back under the table.
Okay. Get your ankles out from behind your ears.
Shut up. Well, you've used that before. It's just really... that means we've reached the end of the show, obviously. Did you get the conundrum, Janine?
Donut. Probably,
it's not donut.
I know it's not.
did you get it?
I thought it was going to be a rude word.
There was almost
I
rude, but
rearranged
cunningly,
my letters and came up with count.
Yes, that's it, obviously.
It wasn't cunty balls.
Which, actually, fun fact, in Australia, used to be their version of Top of the Pops.
What, really?
Countdown. You count down the hit parade.
Oh, I see.
Because you have a hit parade in Australia.
Well, no, I mean, it was countdown the top 59.
Okay. If the title had been Top of the Pops, I might not have understood it.
Well, absolutely. It would have been very confusing.
Well, no, I got axed years ago and there was outrage.
Listen,
when did you last watch it?
Will you shut up about Australia?
The dictionary and teapot go to Stephen Brooke for that. And then August is officially the start of the silly season, so we're having a bit of a break from the podcast, Malarkey, actually. We'll be back in a few weeks with a special show direct from the Edinburgh Television Festival.
Is the room true that you've asked your producer to take a 90% pay cut?
No, it's not. I've sent my producer to America. Can I just say thank you, because he's written this script, so we better give it some, you know, respect. Thanks to Janine, Stephen Brooke and Gareth McLean, and our producer Ben Green, for this is his last show until the new year. Now, the script says, insert gushing praise here.
Well, if I could just say that I feel a bit like I did right at the end of the first season of Charlie's Angels, when we learnt that Farrah Fawcett was leaving. Devastated, but then Cheryl Ladd turned up, and you know, that was kind of all right.
Life goes on.
Anyway, thank you very much to all of you. I'm Matt Wells.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm Matt Wells.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for listening, and sorry for the swearing.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.